You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, as always, Pat Lane, and tonight is episode 59. That makes it the Andy Katzenmoyer episode, or perhaps the Vincent Brown episode. Andy Katzenmoyer majored in basket weaving at Ohio State University, the Ohio State University. He's a smart guy, as you can probably tell. What a dummy. First time picked by the Patriots and absolutely sucked in the league. But nevertheless, Andy Katzenmoyer, number 59. So that's our show. Hopefully it's a little bit better than Andy Katzenmoyer was, but you'll never know. I won't give you too high hopes. This week we have Spags from WTP on. He's a cool guy. I've done a few actually shows with him outside of this, the Play Action Podcast that we kind of hosted together during the Patriots season. He's a really good guy. We talk Patriots and some Bruins as well. So that's cool. And then we also have the 3-Minute Drill and This Week in Sports History, as always. Actually have new cuts for the 3-Minute Drill and This Week in Sports History. Both of those are by Marcus from the Boxes Podcast, so we appreciate him. He actually does the intro song, as always. So, you know, big shout-out to Marcus from the Boxes Podcast. Listen to him on Monday break down movies. They do a movie review. Him and Wesley do a movie review every week. So make sure you check them out. And they actually did a live show this past weekend. And that's on Mac and Goo, the live show. They did a 2000s draft, a 2000s TV draft. It's pretty cool. So definitely check that out. I'm going to get you right into the interview with Spags. But before I do, I want to remind you that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. And now, without further ado, let's get you into that interview with Ryan Spags. All right, we're going to welcome onto the show good friend of mine, guy that I did a separate podcast, multiple episodes with, Ryan Spagnoli, Spags from WTP. How we doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. Just like the good old times, a little Play Action Podcast. I thought you were going to – just like good old times, like I said.
The band is back.
So, well, we did host a podcast called the Play Action Podcast, which doesn't exist anymore, but it was a Patriots podcast. So let's start Patriots.
I mean, the story that everyone wants to talk about right now is the Edelman story. Obviously, he appealed the suspension on Monday. No word yet, but it seems to me typically it takes about a week to hear back. What do you think?
See, it's a weird – I mean, you can go into the whole, you know, the NFL hates the Patriots thing. They're gonna screw them over. But I think this is so different than Deflategate, so I don't want to relate it to that. I think – you know, whether that whole Reddit story was true or not, I think there was some truth that the NFL either leaked information illegally and someone got a hold of it. Because technically, weren't they supposed to, you know what the substance was before they announced the suspension? Didn't it get out a weird way and where it wasn't like supposed to be out yet? Is that true?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it did get out earlier than typical.
Yeah,
he did appeal it, and I think it was it Marshawn Lynch. I think Marshawn Lynch got popped for something, and that didn't come out until after his appeal was heard.
That's what I thought too. Yeah.
So it did come out a little bit early for this one. So I'm not sure who leaked it, who released it. It could have been on either side, to be honest with you. And I know that the team didn't know about it until a reporter from the Providence Journal asked a question. I think to. It was either McDaniels or Casario that was like, what do you think about the Edelman suspension? He's like, what the hell are you talking about? The guy was like, well, yeah, Edelman can spend it 4 games. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. And so, you know, they heard from a guy from the Providence Journal. So, and obviously, you know, Schefter tweeted out or whatever, but that was the first that the Patriots had heard about it.
So, yeah, that's where I think that's a red flag there. So,
yeah,
I mean, my take is I can't see it being 4 games with – them not knowing what it was and suspending him for it is – that's unheard of. I haven't seen anything like that before. So, I mean, if I would – best case scenario, it's no games. But where it's – I mean, he evidently took something. I mean, I think I look at it at the Rodney Harrison thing where he looked at it like, you know, He said it back then. If I took this, if I took it, I missed four games. If I don't take anything, I'm going to probably miss six. Ninkovich did it too with the deer antler spread the year they won the Super Bowl. So, right. I mean, realistically, I could see it getting down to maybe one or two games. I think that's probably where it's going to be. But, I mean, I'm hoping for the best, man.
Well, the question I have with the reduction, right, is if it in fact does get reduced, how does the NFL justify reducing it to two games? I mean, the suspension should be for four games because he used an illegal substance. If he didn't use an illegal substance, then how do you justify giving him two games at all? If you're giving him two games,
what's it for?
Right. You're saying you didn't use a PED, but you're still getting two games. Like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense. If he used a PED, then he gets four games. And if he didn't, he gets none. I don't see how it gets reduced to two games, because that's what even I was thinking. I'm like, okay, well, maybe he'll get one or two games. Then I'm like, wait a second. How can the NFL justify giving him two games for a PED when it's a four-game suspension? So either it's four or it's none, I mean, I would think, at least. I mean, I'm sure they can make up whatever rule they want to, but, yeah. Like, you know, if he used the PED, then it's four games. If he didn't, then it's none, I guess. I don't know. I mean, the only other thing about them not knowing what it is, I think one of the arguments that people have made and one of the things that people have said is that, you know, some of the compounds that break down around it, even though they don't know the substance that it is, you know, if these four or five different compounds break down and are kind of linked to this same drug and it's similar to other drugs that are banned, then they can look at it the same type of way, if that makes any sense. So like, say an anabolic steroid, okay, there's like four different compounds. You know, they say there's like seven different compounds that make up this anabolic steroid. Okay. And five of those compounds are found in the animal system, but they can't tell what this different thing is. Well, that's because it uses two different compounds. So it's not the steroid that's necessarily banned, but it's the same type of thing that is banned because it's using those same type of compounds. So whether that's legitimate or not, I have no idea, but that's, from what I heard, at least, that was kind of the thinking behind it, even though they didn't know exactly what the thing was.
Well, that's what I mean, too. Like, usually when you see these guys get suspended, they list what the exact substance was. And right when it came out, I was like, okay, for what? And you're looking around, and you're not seeing anything about it. And that's when I kind of raised my eyebrow, like, all right, I haven't seen, you know, is it anabolic, like you said? Was it, you know, a deer antler spray, something like that? And we don't know. We still don't know. I mean, I know scientists were looking into the tests. I don't know if he hired that or the NFL, but we still haven't heard if it's out. I mean, they might still not even know what it was for, which obviously helps Edelman. But the other thing, too, is if he loses this, he can take it to federal court. Will he do that? I don't know. You know, like, is it really worth it? I mean, four games, we saw Brady go down for four. It didn't have a big impact. I mean, I think they're okay at the receiving corps. They'll be fine. I mean, but they got a tough stretch those four games, and they're going to need him. You know, they need him, especially with no Dole anymore. You know, they lost Cooks. It's you could go 2-2 easy. I know it basically backtrack 2 years ago. We probably had the same conversation. Oh, they, you know, 2-2 at best. You got to look at it the same way. You know, with Edelman healthy, it helps him. I mean, we see how that offense goes. It's going to open up the field for Gronk. So, I mean, you go down to Jacksonville. They got Houston in there, I believe, too.
Houston's the first game, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got some tough opponents, and we know that defense, too. So, they got to be hoping that it's nothing, man, you know?
Right. I mean, I would agree with you. I would say, though, the Patriots did go 3-1 without Tom Brady in 2016. So it's like, it's not
a good, really, really good quarterback that we,
well, that's true.
We found out was like, holy shit, this kid's fucking legit, you know?
Right. That is true. They all, you know, that is very true. So, I mean, we'll see, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think, well, so I look, so his argument, first of all, and we covered the first one, is that, you know, they don't know what the substance is. But the second argument is that supposedly something screwed up with the handling of the blood sample, or the pee sample, whatever, you know, the urine sample, whatever sample they took. And I'm not sure if it was urine or blood, but either way, the handling of the sample was messed up somehow, is what he's claiming. Now, if he can prove that, I think that eliminates the suspension, because Richard Sherman, I believe it was 2012, got popped for a PED suspension, and there was something wrong with the paperwork, and he won the appeal. So it's not like they screwed any test or anything like that. They just, like, one guy was supposed to sign the paperwork, and he didn't. And because of that, they had to drop the appeal. And the reason why was because if you take it to a federal court, and I know we said, you know, will he take it further? If you take it to a federal court, well, you're supposed to do this, 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 and this. If you don't do those things, the test doesn't matter. It makes no difference what the test looks like or does. It, even if the test was 100% true, because you didn't follow the exact protocol, the test gets thrown out the window no matter what. And so if that's the type of thing, and if he can prove that, they have no choice but to overturn it. And if they don't, then that's a situation where you could see him taking it to federal court, because then he could say, look, here's the chain of things that need to happen. There was an interruption in that chain of things, and because of that, the sample should be thrown out. And he'll win that argument in court. And so the NFL is not going to do that. They're not going to go to court just to lose. You know, and so if he can prove that, then the suspension gets overturned and he gets nothing. Otherwise, I think it's still going to be four games, because I think they can sit there and say, well, it may not be on the banned substance list, but it looks a lot like something is, and I can use my discretion to do that. And then he could take it to court all he wants, and, you know, Goodell will sit there and say, hey, look, you know, it's my discretion, and I said this, and it looks like that, and blah, 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 and all this other shit. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's not going to make a difference. He's not going to win in federal court, so why even go? So he'll just end up with four games.
That's where I was going to ask you. What do you think it comes down to? What do you think happens, basically?
Well, I mean, again, it's a question of whether he can prove that, right?
Yeah.
If he can prove that the chain, you know, the chain of evidence was mishandled, or the chain of evidence wasn't followed, and something along that line,
which I think he had in favor.
Right. And if he can do that, then it gets thrown out and it's no games. If he can't do that, I think it stays four games, because even if the substance is unknown, he can still kind of use that discretionary thing and say, hey, look, I'm, you know, maybe it isn't there, but it looks a lot like it. And from what I believe that it's not the first suspension ever to have an unknown substance. So it's like, even though maybe that substance isn't there because of, you know, the other compounds that could be present, maybe, you know, that could still result in him getting suspended. I mean, clearly they gave him suspension. They weren't going to say, okay, we gave him suspension for nothing. You know, it's not like they said, well, we can't see what that is, so we're just going to suspend him. That doesn't make any sense. They have to have thought that that was something shady. And if that makes sense, which in their eyes, obviously it does, if that makes sense, then I imagine that the suspension will hold up. Like I say, unless he can prove that the chain of the evidence, you know, was interrupted at some point, in which case the sample gets thrown out because it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, that too, and not even that he took something or not, because I don't want to throw him under the bus because, like I said, we don't know yet. But I believe it was it was Rob Ninkovich. Maybe he was on EEI or maybe even like a CSN.
Nate was definitely on a guy talking about it, yeah.
And I didn't see the whole interview, but he basically said with, you know, how, you know, with how health is today and what, you know, what you need to take and all this stuff. I mean, these guys have personal training. Obviously, he's a Guerrero guy. You know, eat this, this, and this, and they don't know what's in half of that shit. Half of it's foreign stuff. It's not approved by the FDA. I mean, he's got his you know, eating line with JE11. He had those hamburgers and stuff. He's not making those. He's not what's knowing what's going into those. And I'm not saying that's what caused it, but I mean, for the most part, you can make the argument players know what they're putting into their body. But to some point, you don't want to hold them against that, because you never know now. Like you get a protein shake offline, you don't know necessarily what's in that. I mean, granted, it is a little shady. He's coming off an ACL tear. He came back relatively fast. I know it's different now. The surgery is more common. A lot of comeback stories. Guys come back better than ever. You know, you look at Brady. You look at guys across the league. But at the same time, he may not have even known. Like you don't even know what he took. Right. And it's interesting to see too. No one covered the appeal. They said it was contentious. That's really all we heard. But I know it happens along closed doors, but we didn't really hear much about how it went. You know, I mean, remember in the Brady case, obviously because it was federal, people were like, this happened, this happened. There was a whole live tweet about it. There was nothing really about this Edelman thing that we've heard. It's just a waiting game, and that's what makes it so frustrating. We don't know anything. We don't know what the substance is. We don't know how the appeal went. All we know is his lawyer. It's a sketchy situation from top to bottom.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I would say it's going to be about a week. That's typically what they say, right? Is usually about a week.
But I'm saying, right, don't we usually hear with appeals and stuff how they went? And I know that there's someone covering those, but you know how shit gets out now with social media and
It is surprising that something didn't get leaked on either side, right? And you don't know who was in the room. Maybe Goodell was the only guy in the room, and you know, and Edelman didn't want any stuff leaking out, and so they didn't, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And so it just depends, right? If Goodell's the only guy from the NFL in there, and he doesn't say anything to anyone else, and Edelman says, I don't want anything getting leaked out, then nothing gets out, you know? And that's – it's one of those things where it's like the more people that know, the more information gets out, right? And if, you know, and if the people in the know didn't want anyone knowing, then the information stays in there. I am surprised that we're not hearing a little bit more. I feel like with the Brady one, we heard a little bit more –
more high
even profile. With the first one, right? Obviously, you know, once it went to court, right? I mean, it's open court. People were sitting there and live tweeting what's going on. But I still feel like we heard a little bit more about the original appeal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, during the Brady thing. So, but I mean, you know, we'll see. It does suck because you're like, they're just waiting on news. Like, okay, what's going to happen? You know, and you just don't know. And they're also not practicing right now, so you have no idea what's going on. So that's frustrating as well. But you know, we'll see. So. There was one more thing. The thing about the Sherman thing, Sherman did get off, and so we'll see if he gets off as well. I mean, again, I just think it's going to be a chain of command thing. Like, did everyone sign the right papers? Did everyone do the right thing? Was everything, you know, was it properly handled from beginning to end? And if it wasn't, that's a situation where I think he gets off. Beyond that, I would say he doesn't have a chance, because these guys, they don't – like, these suspensions never get overturned, because it's like, okay, you had this substance in you. Why do you have that substance in you? Well, I don't know. I don't know what I took. I don't know what I did. You don't get off. It's just the way it goes. I mean, Canelo is the only one.
The only argument is they don't know what it was. Supposedly, they don't even know what it was.
Right.
So can't that be an argument for him too? Like, you're suspending me for shit you don't know what I took. Why am I suspended? Right. Until you know what I took or what, you know, a form of this was, suspend me, fine. But you don't know what I took, you know? Right. Like,
it's true. I mean, it's totally true. I mean, you wonder too what the language says in the, you know, in the actual rule. And I don't know what the rule actually says, but if the language says something along the lines of, you know, these are the banned substances, and then the commissioner also reserves the right to suspend players based on, you know,
a form of something or an unknown.
Right. And I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. But you would think that something like that in there might exist, because the drug manufacturers are ahead of the curve. And so before they can learn to test for anything, these guys are taking new substances that aren't even on the banned list anymore. And so it's like, you know, that's the type of stuff that you look at and you're like, you know, what do we do here? I mean, one thing I did want to bring up is the Ninkovich point that I thought was a great point. He was on EEI talking about, as a matter of fact, on the Dale and Keefe show, and he was saying, you know, that these guys in the bodybuilding magazines that are clearly all roided up. I mean, they're obviously all roided up, and they're all pushing these different supplements because the supplement industry is dirty. It's a dirty industry. It's not regulated. It's not FDA regulated. I mean, some of it is FDA regulated, but a lot of it doesn't have to be FDA regulated. I could make a substance in my kitchen tonight and sell it tomorrow afternoon as a supplement. Now, no one might buy it, but if I can get it back, you know, someone behind me to give me money and, you know, produce it, mass produce it or whatever, I can say, oh my God, look at this supplement and it's great and I use it and I love it and all this other stuff. And I don't need any scientific testing. I don't need any FDA back. I need nothing. I could just do it on my own. And so the supplement industry is dirty. And so you have to be very careful about the things you take. But like, that's just a fact of the supplement industry. And it's just something that these NFL guys have to live with. And most of them do. I mean, you know, you don't know what every single pill has in it, but you have to be super careful because especially, you just don't know.
especially in that league, and especially him being, you know, such a high profile athlete, and especially, like I say, coming off that ACL injury and, you know, looking fucking shredded like he always has. I mean, he did look meaner. He looks the same. Come back fast. You got to know, Jules, that something's coming. Like, I don't think it's like the MLB when you kind of know. I mean, I think they protect themselves a little bit. That's another story for another time. But you got to expect, you know, you're going to get at least one, whether you know or not when it's coming. You know, the way you came back and the way you looked, I mean, you saw him in early May, late April on his Instagram and everything, cutting, running full speed. I mean, I was even like, holy shit, man.
I know. Well, the one thing I'll tell you is that, I mean, look at Welker. Welker got injured in December and was at training camp in July. And so, like, you know, you're talking about 7 months. Now, Edelman got hurt last August. And so it's like, it's been a while. So it's like, you know, so it's not, it's a little bit different. I mean, so, you know, there is a, I think it's a pretty consistent time frame. But you're right. Like, it does seem like when these guys are coming back, Ninkovich was coming back for an injury. Harrison, we got a positive.
This was a tricep, right? Ninkovich, he tore his tricep or something. Ninkovich,
I think was a try. I think you're right. Harrison was coming back from the knee injury they got in Pittsburgh. You know, Ray Lewis when he's using the deer on the spray. Like, all these different guys that are trying to come back from injury, they use kind of a little bit extra just to kind of get themselves back in the game. And so I think that kind of it makes sense. And also, I think for me, and I was talking to someone about this, like, I think having them out the first four games of the season might not be the worst thing in the world. I mean, really, for him, it's kind of like, okay, I mean, I know it's Edelman and we don't necessarily want him out, but, I mean, he doesn't get hurt. He gets to rehab a little bit more. Like, I know he can't be in the facility, but he can be at, you know, TB12. He can be doing his own thing. Like, he'll be fine, and he'll be working out those 4 weeks and getting that knee. He's stronger and stronger and stronger and ready to come back. I think it may not be the worst thing in the world losing for those first 4 weeks, even if they go 2-2. So they go 2-2. I mean, 10-6 wins the division. So even if they go 10-6, which they won't, they'll probably go at least 11-5, if not 12-4. Even if they go 10-6, they still probably win the division. So it's like, you know, you can lose two games early. So what, you know?
But you know him, and he's a gamer. He wants to be out there, especially missing the last. Right. Year that was devastating. I mean, I was in tears for him. Like, and it sucks too because, you know, obviously Brady's everyone's favorite player, but, and he is for me too. But that's a guy you look at, and that's what I said too on my podcast. Like, it's a shame whether he gets suspended or not, because that's a guy you look around the league. You can hate the Patriots all you want, you can't hate that guy. You know, college quarterback came in and worked his balls off, started from the bottom all the way to the top. Made one of probably the clutchest catch in the history of football, and just a gamer, works his balls off, tough as nails, undersized, and now he gets popped. So it's like, ah, dude, you know, and like, obviously it happens more in football than it does in baseball, and it's not as big as it is in baseball. Obviously their suspensions are 80 games and they hold that against you for the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But it sucks just like him being, you know, he's my favorite player, and you know, I love watching him play. And him, seeing him go down, it's like, dude, come on, man. Like,
yeah, it sucks.
You know?
It does suck, yeah. It does suck. That's the way it goes. You know, what are you going to do, right? So, all right, let's get it. So, well, let's hope at least, right, that he you know, clears it and gets nothing and he's back. But we'll see what happens, but let's see what happens. So, I'm hoping at least that – I'm hopeful, right, that he'll clear it, but
absolutely,
who knows?
Absolutely, Patty.
So let's skip over to the Bruins because the big news is that Tavares is a free agent.
Yeah.
And there is some talk about him. Matter of fact, the Bruins had a meeting with him yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
Was it today?
Yesterday was the briefest of the four meetings. But, I mean, there was a report out there that this guy is so meticulous and he's, you know, hockey players are very different. We know that. And he's a very low-key guy. You know, he's not very outspoken. He's more of a lead by example. He was the captain there for, I think, 5 or 6 years. And they had the briefest of the four meetings. Whatever that means, it doesn't matter. You know, what do you got to sell him on? It's Boston. It's out of those markets, it's the best one to play at. You can argue Toronto, but, you know, it's the best place to play, realistically. Right. The most up-and-coming team. They had 112 points with one of the youngest rosters in the league. What else do you need to tell them? You got to sit there for 4 hours and tell them, hey, you know, this is why we want. No, your history speaks for itself.
Right. I mean, to me, it's a good, you know, it's, it goes either two ways for me. Either it's a good thing or it's a bad thing. And to me, I think it's more of a good thing, but you could make the argument it's a bad thing because it's like, you know, well, what do you think, John? You got any questions? No, I'm good. And you're like, oh, okay. See you later, yeah. You know? But I think more realistically, it was, you know, this is the type of team we have. We got a young, up-and-coming team, like you said, good defensemen, good offensive players, you know, good two-way guys. Obviously, you get the best two-way center in the game in Bergeron. Like, you know, so you can kind of go back and forth and look at some of these players that are on the roster and say, hey, look, you know, we have a team that we want to compete for a cup this year. And we thought we were going to do it next year. A lot of people thought we were going to do it last year. But the thing is that our guys are young. You know, the guys that we're relying on to score a ton of points are young. We need a guy who can come in and score a ton of points, which is what you do, not only scoring goals, but also assisting. And, you know, you can kind of set these guys up to be successful. And, you know, that's what we want you to do here. And so I think the short meeting, I don't think should scare anyone away. I think it's a good, you know, like you said, it's, you don't, what are you going to sell them on? Like, you just, we got a young team that's really good and everybody knows it. So like, come in and win with us, you know? I tell you what, man, this, they must be kicking themselves with some of these freaking contracts they got, dude. You know, with Backus on the hook for three more years.
Don't even get me started.
You know, it's just brutal. Krejci with three more years too. You're like, what? Who the hell is going to take either of those freaking contracts? Because Krejci is 7.5, 7, and 7. And Backus is 6 this year, only 4 the next 2 years. So at least only 4 the next 2 years. But even still, dude, I mean, who the hell is going to pay Backus $14 million over the next 3 years? That's crazy. David Backus, he sucks now. And I don't know what the hell happened when he came here. But, you know, it's so frustrating. You just get so frustrated by it.
And, it's honestly, too, how they're going to make it work if he does. And for me, it's, you know, best case scenario, say he doesn't sign here, which, to be honest, I'm hopeful and I hope it happens. But I don't think it's going to happen. We've got a lot of moving pieces. I'd say best case, if he doesn't sign it, best case scenario, he goes back to the Islanders where they're not going to scare you. The scary thing is, you know, there's been reports out there that, you know, he's a Toronto kid. His wife just took a job in Toronto. That, I don't know if that's true. He goes out there. That's scary because they're in your division. Mm-hmm. They got Austin Matthews and John Tavares as their first two centers. But, I mean, Toronto can look at it both ways. Fuck, if he goes to the Bruins, they got Bergeron and Tavares. So. Right. I think, you know, or if he goes to Dallas, I mean, they'll be scary too with Sagan and him. I tweeted that out. Of the teams he's looking on, besides the Islanders, if you put him on one of those rosters and you look at their top two lines, like a centerman, it's right. Scary. But, I mean, I'd say anything, just don't go to Toronto. I mean, Tampa's meeting with him, but they just signed JT Miller to a 5-year. He's making $6.5 million a year.
I mean, Tampa.
They got to trade a bunch of guys like Point and Callahan, just guys who they – like their core guys, and I don't know if they'll do that. They might just be in the sweepstakes to stir the pot a little bit with the Bruins, try to drive the price up. But it's weird that, you know, and this is my take on it. You know, they signed Grizzlick to a 2-year, $1.4 million deal, whatever it was. And people know, I mean, he's not no Torrey Krug, but he plays a similar style and kind of is coming up the way Krug did. And I think they asked Sweeney either at the draft or a couple days after Grizzy signed, and they said, does that have anything to do with it? And he said, I'm not going to say no, but it definitely does have something to do with it. Kind of just twisted himself up about it. And then obviously draft night, we heard a rumor they were going to package Krug for, you know, for Oscar Klefbom, who's making like $2 million less a year. And he's 3 years younger, left shot defenseman, big left shot defenseman, what they're looking for. So I think if they can land him, I think Krug is shockingly, you know, everyone thinks Krejci, Backus got to go. I think Krug goes and like a prospect or something like that to eat the majority of the deal. But people have been saying and reporting that people have been calling about Krejci because I think of those three, he's got the most, not of Krug, of Backus and Krejci, he's got the most value to his game. I mean, he's a gifted offensive player. He can still play a second line spot. Yeah, he battles some injuries, but he can help a team out like Montreal, who needs a veteran spark in the lineup, who needs some, you know, offensive offensive ability up front. And I think moving Krejci will be tough, but won't be as hard. But the tough part will is they'll have to be like, okay, give us Anders Bjork or give us a Danton Heinen too, because we're taking on that whole contract and, you know, he's not worth that. So give us a prospect too. And that's where it's going to hurt them. Right. And thankfully they got a bright future. You know, they're deep in some areas. They're like the Yankees of the NHL. They got a great farm system, so it won't hurt them. But I just think it's too many moving pieces just to get him here. But the good thing is the Bruins were a laughingstock for hockey for like the last 5-6 years. And just to be able to meet with this guy, I mean, he's probably the most famous high-profile free agent hockey's ever seen. You know, you don't see right. these guys hit free agency like this before. Just for them to be on that list is great, and it helps them for the next time one of these guys comes out.
Right, well, it's true. I mean, it's kind of like what they said with the Celtics, where it was like, you know, breaking through Lanning Horford was great. But, you know, kind of the legwork leading up to that, they had met with a few guys. They had a few guys here. Like, people were talking about them, like, maybe I want to play with them. And so that's almost matters just as much. If they could land Tavares, that'd be awesome. I honestly, in my opinion, I feel like if you can get someone to take Krejci and not lose too much else with him, just get rid of him. Honestly, yeah. I'm at this point right now where I'm like, even if you don't get Tavares, just get rid of him, because it gives you so much more flexibility against the cap. And you know, you're losing that massive contract, which, you know, he's not worth $7.5 million this year, obviously. I don't think, at least. And,
no way.
You know, and then he's getting six the next 2 years, and it's like, dude, like,
if the thing you, that's imagine scary 3 years from now, trade like, clause though. That's where it's.
Well, that's true, right? So he's gonna want to go to where you're sending him to, right? But I think you can make it worth his while. You know, go to him and say, hey, look, David, where do you want to go? You know, where do you want to go? Where do you want to play? And see if he can work a deal out with one of those guys. And if you got to give up a prospect, give up a prospect. I think in that situation, it's a Tavares situation. If Tavares says, I'll come here, and you say, okay, you know, let's sign something, sign an agreement, but we can't do it officially until we get rid of Krejci.
Which I think they got something in, like, personally, I don't even think they'd be at this meeting if they didn't have a plan or something in place already. Right. I could see them. I mean, hockey's weird. You don't hear the leaks as much as you do in other sports, you know? Yeah. I feel like they got something, maybe a draft night. I mean, they're all together that whole week, all the GMs talking.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they got a deal with, you know, say, God, Florida, or whoever, any other team, Team X, for, hey, you know, if we get Tavares or he wants to come here, what's the deal for Krejci? They got a deal already, so it's already in place. Because I personally, they can't really do much until they get dumped that. They can't afford him unless
right.
he signs like a $6 million. They got $12 million in cap space. They don't have a backup goalie. They don't have a fourth line center. They got some holes already, and you got to disperse that somewhere.
Right. I agree. So we'll see. I think you and I are both on the same page, though. I think, you know, as cool as it is and as awesome as it would be, I would be surprised if they ended up signing.
Yeah.
So,
but like I said, it's good to be on that list. And finally, the Bruins are back to being that original six team. That's always good. I mean, granted, Tavares or not, they're going to be good for a long time. You know,
right.
You get, obviously, you got some guys you got to pay. Like, that's another thing, too. Like, McAvoy's up next year. He's going to want $8-9 million. DeBrusk is up in 2 years. Donato's up next year. You got so many young guys that are up that are going to demand big, big money. And, you know, the Krejci contract sucks, but they got very, very lucky with David Pastrnak next year. He's making 6.2 or 6.3 a year. Brad Marchand's making 6.1, and Bergeron's making like 6.8. That's the best line in hockey, and they're, you know, combined $19 million.
Right.
That's a really good deal.
That's huge. I
mean, Chiarelli signed Krejci to that, but at the time, he was worth, I mean, I don't know, I'm not going to say 7.5 and maybe not the year's length. He was always an injury-prone guy. But he was coming off that monster 2013 playoff, and he was great when we won the cup. Granted, you know, that's five years ago in 13 and eight in 2010. He's a prospect then. But at the time, it was okay. That's what the market is. That's what you want. We got to give it to him because he's playing well.
Right.
But man, the years, that's where I was just like, God. And same with Backes too. I think he signed here when he was like 30, 31. Gave him a 6-year deal. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, it's rough. And he's been garbage since.
Oh, he's done nothing. I mean, he's heart and soul. Like, he works hard. He's a Bruin at heart. You know, he's a tough guy. He'll stick up for his teammates. He works his balls off. But for that money, you're not, you know, if you're making that money, you better be David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand. And you're not. And he never was.
I agree. So, all right, I guess that just about does it. Before we let you go, Spags, I do want – this is the Weekend Warrior podcast. And for those of you that are new listeners, Weekend Warrior is someone who plays sports kind of outside of, you know, an official sports team or just with your buddies or a men's league or whatever. So I know you play hockey in college, but we want your greatest Weekend Warrior moment.
So for me, it's got to be playing street hockey with my buddies. I got a pretty good story for you. We, you know, my senior year, once the, you know, the weather turned out, you obviously senior year of high school, the weather gets pretty nice out. You're out of school pretty quickly. And me and my buddies live down there in the summer. We play all the time. Obviously, it's a little different now with work. But, you know, funny story for you. You know, Louie, my podcast host, also a WTP member. He's been my best friend forever, and you know, we got a good group of friends. We, like you said, we always go down there and play. And he played lacrosse goalie, so obviously a sicko in the head. So you know, he would always play. He'd always play defense, and he's a stay at home guy. He can't really skate well, but you know, we said, Louie, we don't have a goalie today. Throw the pads on. And Louie's one of those kids we like to get going sometimes, and we threw him in the net. And, you know, he said, I'm not wearing a cup and, you know, don't, you know, take it easy on me. And, you know, us being, you know, wise guys and just being pricks to him, we were like, all right, you know, kind of winked at each other. And we spent the whole game just teeing up clap bombs, trying to aim for his nuts. And finally, the one kid who doesn't play hockey comes in, just takes a little dinky backhander. And he didn't even catch on to it. And he takes a little dinky backhander and just got him right there. And he was bent over, screaming, swearing at the park. There's little kids around. And I mean, that's probably my Weekend Warrior moment. I thought that was pretty funny. We always used to get together Saturday morning. So, I mean, you remember the little things like that, right?
That's great. That's it. That's what you got to do, man. You remember the little things. And that's what makes it fun. You know, that's why people keep going back. And that's why Weekend Warriors are out there, you know, working, you know, getting after it every weekend or even some nights, sometimes during the week, you know what I mean? So, all right, Spags. So before we let you go, you know, plug you, plug your show, you know, where can people find you?
Yeah, Wise Guys Podcast. Like I said, me and my buddy Louie, we put out a show pretty much every week. Pat's going to join us in the coming weeks to jump on probably when football season gets started up again, training camp. Find me on Twitter, Ryan_Spags. Might tick people off sometimes with my takes. but yeah, I talk everything Boston sports. You guys know me out there. So yeah, Pat, thanks for having me on, man. I really appreciate it. And just like the good old days, man, we'll have to get together soon and rip a couple Patriot pods.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. It's been fun. We got to definitely get together again during the season. That'd be fun.
Absolutely. Take care, Patty. Thank you.
All right, kid. You too.
Okay, huge thanks to Spags for coming on. Again, great having him on the show. Really, really cool guy. And definitely check out his show, Wise Guys Podcast, with him and Lou. It's a really, really cool show. So I think you'll enjoy that as well. So Lou is a New York guy, and he's a Boston guy. So they do talk a little bit, you know, Boston, New York. It's a fun show to listen to. So I want to get you into the 3-minute drill in This Week in Sports History. So let's get into it.
And now for something a little different.
Check, check, check. 3-minute drill. 3-minute drill, Sid.
So how amazingly awesome is that intro? I'm going to start the 3 minutes now, I guess, but I just had to say that before I started the 3 minutes. So here we go. All right, so what I want to talk about for the 3-minute drill is I really want to talk about Tyler Hilinski. And for those of you guys that don't know who he was the Washington State quarterback who committed suicide. And the coroner came back and said that his brain was the equivalent of a 65-year-old's brain, that he already had brain damage from, conceivably or assumingly at least, from playing football. And so then the question that I kind of have in my mind is, you know, how do we justify allowing our children to play football? And that's really the thing. I mean, I grew up loving football. I love the Patriots. Football is my favorite sport. I think that, you know, it's America's love. Like, America loves football more than it loves any other sport. And, you know, That's just the truth. That's just the way it is, and there's nothing you can do about that. I just feel like that's the way it is. But with all the information that's out there, are we really going to sit there and tell our kids that they can play football? Are we going to look at them and say, you know, yes, you can play football? Or are we worried about their brains? And are we worried about them, you know, kind of moving on and living successful lives after they leave the game of football? It's just, it's so hard to look at and justify. And to me, and again, you know, I have kids and I don't know. Like, you know, my son, I don't know if I'm going to let him play football. And maybe he'll want to. And I can tell you right now, he's two, all he talks about is football. And it's football this and football that. And he's always got a football in his hands, shockingly, I know. He's always got a football in his hands. And he's always crashing into me and crashing into things and tackling me and throwing me the ball. And you know, at a young age, he's already into it. But am I going to allow him to play? I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because I play football, and I feel like I don't have any brain damage, I hope. Right? But I don't know. I have no idea what my brain looks like, and I won't know until I die, which means I guess I'll never know. But no one else will know until I die. And so I just, you know, it becomes a question of morality almost for us. You know, do we allow our kids to suffer that potential abuse? Because you see these guys get out of the NFL, and some of them are fine. Some of them live long lives, and, you know, sure, they have aches and pains and bumps and bruises, but they're not, you know, they're not going crazy, right? They're not, you know, suffering from crazy bouts of depression like some of the guys that, you know, have had CTE and all this other stuff. So the question is, why are these guys not, and why are other guys suffering from those things? And so it's just something, we just don't know the answer to that. And so I think, it goes to 3 minutes, I think that for us, we have to look at ourselves and kind of say, you know, what do we think about it? And we know the risks for sure, but we also understand, you know, that there are a lot of good things that come from it. And there are a lot of things, I think, for team building purposes that come from it. And, you know, I think football is a game where every single player has to be playing perfectly on every single play. There's no other sport in the world like that. There just isn't. There isn't another sport that works that way. Hockey's not like that. Basketball's not like that. Baseball's not like that. It doesn't matter. In baseball, there could be seven guys in the field doing absolutely nothing, and the pitcher and the guy who catches the ball could be the only two to do anything, and the play would still happen the same way. Realistically, if you think about it, you know, in order for a play in football to be successful, all 11 guys have to contribute and have to do what they're supposed to do. So I think it teaches important lessons to our kids. But, you know, you wonder, like, is my kid going to suffer from, you know, irreversible brain damage because they played football? You know? But I don't know. And then you say, well, should I not let them do anything? Should I let them play soccer? Because some soccer people suffer from CTE as well, because they're all heading the wall all the time and they're suffering concussions and doing all this different stuff, right? And then you hear about people who have concussions who, you know, never did anything. And they never necessarily, like, you know, they never played any sports and they just fell and suffered a concussion. So you just, you don't know, right? But you feel like, if I'm going to try to protect my kid from everything harmful, does that also include football? It's a good question, and it's a question that I don't feel comfortable answering with my two-year-old right now, and it's something that my wife and I will have to talk about, obviously. But, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it wouldn't have been a thought in my mind. Oh, my son's playing football. Absolutely, my son's playing football. He loves football, he's playing, for sure. And now it's a conversation that happens with him, but also was going to happen between my wife and I. That to say, you know, what do we think about the risks? Do we think the risks are great enough that we tell him he can't play? Whether he's pissed at us or not, we tell him he can't play. And so, you know, it's a question that I guess everyone will have to answer, and I'll certainly be approaching it, but it's something to think about for sure. So, anyways, that's my 3 minute drill, and let's get into this week in sports history. Marcus?
And now for something we think you'll really like. This week in sports history.
All right, I'm going to go chronologically as always. First one is June 26, 1969. A soccer match between El Salvador and Honduras, or Hornduss, however you want to pronounce it, leads to the 100-hour war. And honestly, it seems kind of ridiculous. And I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, like, really, it was ridiculous. And what happened was, is that, so they were qualifying for the World Cup. And there were two matches before on June 8th and then June 15th as well. June 8th was won by Honduras, and El Salvador won on June 15th. And so there was one more for a playoff, kind of to decide what was going on. And then El Salvador, the day of the game, dissolved all diplomatic ties with Honduras, stating that in 10 days since the game in El Salvador, 11,000 Salvadorians have been forced to flee Honduras, which is crazy. And so Honduras basically said that, you know, El Salvador said that Honduras had done nothing to prevent murder, oppression, rape, plundering, and the mass expulsion of Salvadorians. Like, what? Okay. And so, you know, it's crazy. And basically they were saying that the government had done basically nothing to punish these people that were doing these awful things to the El Salvadorian people. And so they just said, forget about it. Like, we're out. And so they had the match. El Salvador won the decisive game 3-2 after extra time. Now, the war itself didn't actually happen until July. I think it was like July 15th or something like that. But this is the game that kind of kicked it all off. They dissolved all ties before the game. Then they had the game. El Salvador won. And then they, again, it was like 100 hours because it was like July 14th. And they signed a peace treaty on like July 16th. So it was super quick. But, and again, it wasn't caused by the soccer match. But the soccer match certainly didn't help. And it was almost like, you know, these El Salvadorians went to Honduras for the second game and then almost, you know, didn't come back or whatever. So crazy, crazy stories. But that's the 100 hours war. And again, it's kind of revolved around qualifying for the 1970 World Cup. So wild. And then the other one is June 27, 2013 is a day that will live in infamy for the Boston Celtics. The Celtics traded Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Jason Terry, and the great DJ White to Brooklyn in exchange for Gerald Wallace, Mr. Kardashian himself, Chris Humphries, Marshawn Brooks, Chris Joseph, Keith Bogans, three first-round picks in 2014, 2016, and 2018, and the right to swap first-rounders in 2017. Crazy. So clearly, we know what happened with that deal. Gerald Wallace is unbelievable. Chris Humphries is the few. I mean, sorry. The players that they got sucked, right? I mean, so what? You know, Gerald Wallace was fine. Chris Humphries was a bum. Brooks, I don't think ever played. Chris Joseph, I don't think ever played. And Keith Bogans, I don't think ever played. But those guys are irrelevant, basically. You know, the beauty of this deal was that it wasn't about the players they were getting. It was about the draft picks they were getting. When the deal happened 5 years ago, people looked at it and said, this is stupid. You're trading these guys and you're getting these picks in the future. That's great. But what if they're good? Then it's worthless to you. And, you know, I mean, there's an argument certainly to be made about that. Obviously, they were wrong, you know, but it's one of those interesting things where you look at it and say, you know, the Celtics bet on the future and they were right. Obviously, 2014 was James Young. He obviously never turned into the player they thought he was going to be, although that was like number 17, I think he was drafted. So it's not like that was a lottery pick. So they kind of gave it a few more years. The Nets obviously sucked. 2016, they drafted Jaylen Brown, number 3 overall, which, you know, we all know what happened there. 2017, I'm sorry, yeah, 2017, they got the number 1 pick, which they, of course, traded to Philadelphia for Jason Tatum. They also traded a first-round pick. They also acquired a first-round pick as well. And so that's, so that pick obviously didn't convey this year because the Lakers didn't finish between 2 and 6. But as long as Sacramento doesn't finish the number 1 pick, they're getting Sacramento's pick next year. Otherwise, they're getting Philly's number 1 pick. So they're getting another number 1 pick with that Tatum deal. So they're taking Tatum. Obviously, Tatum looks like he's going to be better than Fultz. And they're getting another pick out of that. And the last pick, the 2018 pick, was used in the Kyrie Irving deal. And I know that you can make the argument that Isaiah Thomas was the centerpiece of that deal, but that deal doesn't happen without the Brooklyn pick, without the 2018 Brooklyn pick. So essentially, what they got for the Brooklyn deal, for KG and whoever the for KG, Paul Pierce, and the other two bums they traded, was James Young, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, and probably a lottery pick next year. Pretty good. Pretty good. Okay? And obviously the Celtics, you know, had this crazy thing where they were competing for championships. Not really championships. I mean, not with Golden State. But they were competing at the top of the Eastern Conference while also getting lottery picks, which just doesn't happen. And, you know, pretty unbelievable. They set themselves up so well for this. And so we'll see. And it's not stopping because they have the pick next year. They have the Memphis pick, which is top 8 protected next year, top 4 protected in 2020, and then unprotected in 2021. They got the Clippers pick, which is top 14 protected the next 2 years. And then it goes to a second round pick if that doesn't happen. So, you know, they have more picks coming through, and they're going to continue to build their team with good young players, hopefully. Because Danny's been knocking it out of the park with the draft. So we'll see. And my last This Week in Post History, I told you I was going chronological order. I didn't because I had to save this one for last. June 28th, 1984, a loving couple, goes into a hospital and comes out with a beautiful baby boy. And a baby boy they had great high hopes for, thought that he would change their lives and possibly even change the world. And while I may have changed their lives for sure, I don't know, maybe I haven't changed the world yet, but they seem to like me. So I guess I'm doing something right. Now, my birthday, June 28th, 1984, the world was forever changed when Pat Lane was brought into the world. For those of you who are not great at math, that's the bane of be 34 when you listen to this because it's coming out on my birthday. So anyways, thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Again, quick shout-outs. Spags for coming on the show. Really appreciate him. Check out the Wise Guys podcast with him and Lou. Thanks again to Marcus for the two drops and the intro song as well. Listen to him. As I already said on the Boxes podcast, Honor the Triforce as well with hashtag Dork and Mac and Goo. Big shout out to M.Dot and Core for the outro song. M.Dot is at M.D.O.T. Boston on Instagram and Twitter. Core is at K.O.R.E. of E.M.S. on Twitter. And as far as this show, Weekend War Pod with no E's on Instagram, Twitter, all those good places. And I am at WTP Lane on Twitter. You can follow me as well. That's my account. I mean, it's the same person tweeting for both accounts. So I'm not going to pull a Jimmy Fallon, you know, and congratulate myself for doing such a good job on my own account. I'll make sure I switch to my other account. But it's not like I have a burner account. You already know it's me, right? It's like, okay, if the show comments on it, I guess then I'm being weird and commenting on my own stuff. But I'll try not to do that, okay? This is not a burner account because you already know. So it's like, you know, I'm not hiding anything from you. Everything's on the table. All right, I promise. Everything will be above board. But again, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Love you guys, and I will talk to you next week. A soccer match between El Salvador and Honduras? No, I don't think that's how it's pronounced.